take one.
After 19, before he bought the studio, we moved to 2611 Murray Avenue. On the second floor, there were two apartments. Downstairs was a little bar and a hot dog joint named Poli.
Oh, interesting.
And Larry's father had a little bar down there and served sandwiches. And Larry lived on the left as you're facing the building, and I lived on the right. So this was already a bigger apartment. And immediately my father took the living room and turned it into a studio. So we didn't have a studio, or we didn't have a living room, but we had a studio. And during the day, he would work for Clarence Burley, and then the evening and on the weekends, we had sittings in the studio. And then my mother, who never knew much about photography, learned how to retouch negatives so she could help out. And he would retouch negatives for other photographers. And what that means is you take the negative and you remove all the blemishes on the negative so that when the prints are made, they look
beautiful.
He would charge them 15 cents per head. To give you an idea of what that means is today, if I retouch negatives for other photographers, and I do once in a while, I charge $50. And they're happy. Because not too many people can do this. But that's all right. Other retouchers do it and it's fine. But, and in 2611 Murray Avenue, we had the studio. He worked during the week and then on the weekends in there. Then when they bought the studio, when he took it over himself, it was time to move. So we bought Izzy Binstock's house. His mother's house, I beg your pardon. No, wait a minute. It was 5527 Stanton Avenue. And it was... No, Izzy Binstock... No, I'll tell you who it was. A fellow named Feltzer, who was in the tombstone business in Pittsburgh, built that house out of granite, solid granite tombstones. And my father never had a charge account. He never owed anybody any money. He would save up $100 and then buy $100 whatever. He wouldn't charge it. So the only debt he ever had was this house. It was $9,500, and he hated the idea of owing anybody money. So he would retouch negatives at night for other photographers at 15 cents a head and paid off that house in 2 years.
Oh, my God.
3 o'clock in the morning, it was the retouching stand, which I still have in the studio now. I saved it. It was right beside his bed. When he was too tired, then he would fall right in the bed. And my mother used to do the work that was like pre-retouching the negative. You didn't have to have a huge amount of experience, and she did that, and he would do the finishing, and then it was my job every Sunday morning to go back to the Hill District and pay back at $2 a week the Hebrew Free Learners Association and deliver the negatives to a photographer. There was one that was in the north side. And I used to get sick on the streetcar because of the motion. So I would walk half the way. And this photographer was a big sport. And he would give me a nickel. And I would go to the Isleys and get this big ice cream. That was my job. Sunday morning, I delivered negatives. I picked up negatives. And I went to pay back the loan. And the studio did well, and 1945 in February I went to the Army, and then
before we get to the Army.
Yes.
Where did you go to school here?
Oh, I went to Gladstone when I first came here.
You were still a youngster back then.
I was 12 years old.
Oh, you were 12. That's about middle school then.
Right.
Junior high school.
I couldn't speak English, but I could do all the math. So I would do the math, and they would teach me English. And then that was an elementary school, so that there wasn't any math for me to learn there anymore. And then when we moved to Squirrel Hill, I went to Colfax. And it was Miss Pregler, I think, was the... Right? And somebody told me that either she just died or... Yeah. When I came here, they changed my name to Henry because nobody liked Germany and it was no good to be. And that's happened to Kissinger, too. His name was Heinz, and he changed it to Henry. But when I went to Colfax, I showed Miss Pregler my report cards from Vienna, which weren't anything to write home about. But she wanted to see what do you know.
What you knew.
Right, because at that age, I already had solid geometry, but they didn't have that until high school here. So she said, your name isn't Henry, your name is Hans. So she changed it back. And I went to Alderdice for 1 year after that. Because then we moved, and then Alderdice, Peabody didn't start till 9, 10, 11, 12. So 8th grade I went to Alderdice. Yeah, 7 and 8 I went to Alderdice, and then I went to Peabody after that. And I was always 1 year behind. Because I was 1 year older than most of the children in my class because I couldn't speak the language, nor did I know the history, or anything else. I could do the math, but that wasn't enough. And then when the war broke out, my father wanted to volunteer, but he was too old already. He was 51 years old, and they wouldn't take anybody 51. So I was drafted into the Army out of high school, and in 45, January 45, and I wasn't around for graduation. And when I got into the Army, you know, the United States Army was very nice, but they sent me after basic training to the Presidio of Monterey to learn Japanese. I could speak and read and write German, but they sent me to learn Japanese in 3 weeks. So the only thing I learned was, I'm an American soldier, don't shoot me. And we were one of the first, then I got in, we were the first troops in after the surrender on the Missouri into Korea. There was a occupation force sent to Korea because the Japanese had been there for, I don't know, 40 years. And at that point, I was in the military government, but I was only there a short time because I really didn't know anything about government. And there was a spot found in the photography section, and I spent all of my time documenting the occupation and doing whatever was necessary.
Where were you based?
My base was in Seoul, Korea, but I went all over. I went to Manchuria, I went to Shanghai, Tokyo. They would send you on certain missions to document repatriation of Koreans that were sent to China to as laborers. So I spent 3 weeks doing that. And
what were your reactions to what you saw?
I was very young, and in Korea, Korean wasn't spoken. That was not the language. When the Japanese sort of occupied Korea, they wiped out the Korean language. You were made to speak Japanese. All the literature, all the government documents were in Japanese. They even made people take Japanese names. They wanted to wipe out Korean history. They just wanted them to feel that they were, and they used them as slave laborers and things like that. I didn't think of any. I spent a week at the war criminals trials in Tokyo, and my job was to take pictures as they were coming out or going in and on the bus of Tojo and all the rest. And at that point, I think the U.S. government learned from the mistakes of World War I. They helped them along to become a nation of not militaristic people, but rather law-abiding citizens. And that's when MacArthur, you know, helped them write the Constitution. And I didn't have any great personal feelings about that. I would have rather gone to Germany.
But they felt you could have been more useful.
I'll tell you one reason why I think I wasn't sent to Germany. The U.S. government considered Austria as part of Germany now. So you were almost like an enemy alien. And this is something, you know, that they weren't too thrilled about. So a lot of people that I know that were from Germany, Austria, were there in the occupation. But that they got in earlier, or they didn't need any more over there. You know. I thought it was a little ludicrous trying to learn Japanese in 3 weeks. So,
one of the things we haven't touched upon through this is whether there was any religious background within the home.
Not really. We belonged to a temple, but I didn't realize the temple meant reformed. But ours wasn't. I don't remember a reform movement in Austria. There was a temple, and that was it. And we went maybe 3-4 times a year, and that's at the most. The studio was open on Saturday. There was in Austria the Kultusgemeinde, which is the headquarters for all the Jewish people that live in Vienna. It was like your JCC, except it didn't have a gym. And it took care of a lot of things. It would take care of the Jewish part in the cemetery. In Vienna, there's one cemetery. There are four doors. And everybody is buried out there. And door number 4 is to the Jewish section. It was like a JCC and a federation combination. I had a man who tried to teach me, you know, Hebrew and the prayer book and all that. He would come to the house. My grandmother, yes, did light candles Saturday night. And I guess my mother did too. But outside of that, we weren't kosher.
Bar mitzvah?
Well, I was too young.
Yeah, he was
and I think
too.
That's why the guy came to the house. Mm-hmm. He was going to teach
training,
me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What happened when you came to the United States?
As far as religious affiliation? There was a woman named Miss Saul S-A-U-L. I don't know her first name.
A lot of souls in Pittsburgh.
Right?
Yes.
She lived near Beth Sholem. And she sort of took care of all these refugees that came. And in Squirrel Hill, I think I was bar mitzvah at Beth Sholem. Now, I talked to the rabbi about this one day. I happened to be there for a wedding. I said, you know, someday I'm going to come here. I want to look through your archives. And it would be in 1939. But I think that's where I was bar mitzvah. But there was no party at Green Oaks. or the kids' party at Concordia.
And how did he say that he was bar mitzvah with you?
Bert Ostrowski, but then he told me no. I was not today. There's this fellow named Bert Ostrowski, and I said, I think I was bar mitzvah with you. He said, no. it was not a great event.
Don't remember going to Sunday school or anything like that.
I did go to Sunday school at B'nai Israel, and I went to Hebrew school there, I guess. Yeah. At that time, it was somebody, you know, from the congregation who would be there and teach it. It wasn't as well, you know, done as it is today. We belonged to B'nai Israel once we moved to East End. And I've been there ever since. I was confirmed there. I was in the confirmation class.
Now you've got a big change coming up.
Right. Should have done it 15 years ago. But, you know, you try to hang on.
Oh, of course. That was a normal thing.
It's, you know, things change. And the areas don't stay the same. And all the Jews moved out of East End. Why should there be a synagogue there? It'd be nice if we could move the whole thing.
Oh, it's such a beautiful building.
Of course it is.
Just a heart. The last time I was there for a function was when Doris Binstock's youngest daughter was married.
Yes. Yes. That was, 10, 15 years ago.
About 10.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Sure. It's a great place. It's unfortunate where it is.
And they did such a wonderful job with kids and everything there.
But we don't have enough kids there anymore. The Hebrew school maybe have two people in it. I don't know if there is a confirmation class this year. There's nobody left, you know. And it's not coming back.
What about friends when you were young? Did you have much time?
I did, yes. Both in Squirrel Hill and East End, and we still have our friends from those days.
And did you participate in anything in the way of athletic activities or anything at all?
If eating is an athletic event. No.
You had a club.
A what?
The club, the Bonas.
We had a group, you know, like a gang from high school.
Is that in B'nai Israel?
No, it was a
Peabody. From Peabody. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were like 8 or 10 of us, and we sort of hung out together. And one of them was Harry Morris, and his mother is the one that taught me Yiddish. She lived on North St. Clair Street, and we would come to his house every night with sort of a, you know, a group of 8 or 10 of us. And she had 4 sons or 5 sons. And everybody spoke Yiddish in that house. So when I came into this group, she said to me, if you want to talk to me, you're going to have to learn Yiddish, which I did.
Is the Harry Morris who was involved with Hillel?
No. He was a pharmacist and still is. I married a girl from McKeesport, and she died a few years ago, and he's still out in McKeesport, White Oak.
That's where I lived.
Yeah. I'll tell you who she was a Schwartz. She had two brothers that were doctors. You know who I mean?
Yeah. Norman Schwartz.
Right. Right, and then there was another brother.
Yeah, the younger one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He died many years ago.
Yes.
Yes. Well.
And he married, and she got sick and died a few years ago. But he's still there.
You're still friendly with the
yes,
gang.
Yes, as a matter of fact, about 3 years ago, we decided to have a reunion. I decided we're going to have a reunion. One of the fellows who's in Washington, D.C., who was sick a little bit, and he's okay now, and he said to me, you know what, I want to get together with the boys. And I said, fine. And I called around, and I got, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 12 of us, and several have died already. And we all came here, and we all looked at old movies from when we were kids. And I had them put on videotape, and they all brought their wives. And we had a good afternoon.
Nice.
One of them came from California. Yeah.
A lot of the group married...
within the group.
Within the group, you know, we all dated... each other.
You're part of that group. Hmm?
Oh, I knew him when I was in eighth grade.
Oh, really? Isn't that lovely? You didn't tell us that as part of growing up.
I'm trying to forget it.
It was a great group. We used to go to the dances at the Y on Sunday night.
I did too.
Was that fun? It was good.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we all grew up together, and we were real fortunate that everybody, all the wives got along with all the husbands, you know. It was a really nice group, and we were fortunate that a lot of people stayed in the area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very nice. Yes.
City has strangers. Really?
That's right.
Very unusual to say I'm still friends with the people that I knew when I was in grade school.
Yeah, it's a very stable community in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yes.
No question about it.
Well, she grew up in Easton from
what's
a large Berman.
Berman.
Hi.
An enormously large family, which was different than mine. I had one uncle. My mother's brother, his name was Eugene, and he was in the diplomatic corps, and he at one time in his life worked for Count Ciano, who was Mussolini's son-in-law, as his personal secretary, because he spoke 12 languages fluently. And then he was at the Peruvian embassy in Zurich and the Polish embassy in Vienna, but he always was in the diplomatic corps somewhere. So that was my only relative. My father had a sister who was in Brazil, and she came here for a very short time, and she literally thought the streets were paved with gold and all they had to do is bend over and pick it up.
Yes.
Well, when she saw that you really need to go to work, she said, no, no, I want to work. I go back to Brazil. So we did. I said,
what was her name?
God, I don't remember.
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Does the Dane name Justin Fleischman mean anything?
Oh, absolutely. No, it wasn't Justin. Julius. Was it Julius or Justin? Maybe it was Justin.
I have a Justin Fleischman.
Yeah. He was a photographer in the Morrifield Apartments. Came here from Germany. And he was a lawyer. But he couldn't speak English, so he couldn't practice law. But he was a pretty good photographer, too. So he opened a studio in the Morrifield Apartments. And he was there for years. His wife, Celia, I think her name was, worked for us for a very short time. He just died a little while ago.
Mm-hmm. Do you have much of a relationship with him now?
No, I'll tell you why. Most photographers didn't talk to each other. It was a big secret how you do things. Like, one photographer wouldn't let the other one into the dark room because I'm doing things in there that nobody else can do. It was like, today it's totally different. You know, I was just at a meeting in February of a group of 25 photographers from the United States and Canada that Kodak invited. They want to know what makes you work well in the area that you work in, and what do you do that is really helping you. So they published a book on this, and that's going to be like an instructional manual of sorts to other photographers throughout the United States and Canada. Today, photographers share things, and in those days, I won't show you how to do this, then you'll do it.
Secret.
Of course.
Can we go back to June? You started talking about her, and we don't have too much about her. Tell us more about
her. There's nothing about her. No.
It's a good thing she's not in the room.
Well, I wouldn't say it, is it? She came from a huge family. The Bermans were very big in Pittsburgh. Most of them were born in the United States. One or two were not. And her mother's side is the Ansovitz.
Ansovitz.
S-E-R-V-I-T-Z.
Right.
Molly and Morris.
And
what did your father do?
In a grocery store. In East End. And there were another one of my uncles had a grocery store on Mellon Street. And one had a garage on Mellon Street. We all lived in the same block, two blocks, and we had a really good relationship with my cousins, and we're still very, very friendly. We all lived together, and we're all the same age.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is nice.
Yeah, because Hans had no cousins here. You know, he had no family, so we absorbed him.
One of my favorite expressions is, some of my best friends are family.
Right.
Wow.
And we tease him about being an in-law. We tease all of
them. That's right.
And you were growing up.
Yeah, I got along very well with all of my relatives.
Economic picture became better.
When I was in Vienna, there was no question about money. It never entered anybody's mind. It never entered my mind. We always had whatever we wanted. We came here and didn't have anything. You know, that was a big shock. My mother never did any of her own shopping, even. We had a woman that cooked, and then when we had one woman that took care of the two children, me and my sister and I. And we came here, and there was nothing. You know, $15 was a weekly salary, but she learned how and made do. You know, it's... That was a big shock. Mm-hmm. You know, you come, we had a place for the summer that they rented in Bad Ischl for the children and the maid, and my father would come on the weekend to be there. And then they went to Karlsbad not steam baths, but...
It's a spa.
Yeah, it was a spa kind of thing, and they had mineral waters there. And you drank the water. Whether it did you any good or not didn't make any difference, but it sure did their economy a lot of good. And when you come here, and there's always almost nothing, it's just, you know, it's a shock. But they made do, and the economic picture became better. I don't know when they bought the house. Let's see. 39, 45. Let's say 42, 43, they bought the house. Then it became a little more, you know. So.
That must have been right, too, because that's when I met you.
Yeah.
And you had it then.
Right. And 1 year before, we lived above the studio because there wasn't any money on Penn Avenue. Maybe not a whole year, maybe only 6 or 8 months. And then they bought the house, and then, you know. And then this is the unique thing about the U.S. You can come here, and if you are willing to work 18 hours a day, you can make a living, and you can do better. Whereas if you went to Cuba, you couldn't, because the opportunity is here. There's no doubt about it, even today. So,
think that takes care of the approach. Now tell us something about your children as they were growing up.
The children as they were growing up.
Where did they go to school?
They went to Morningside, just like their mother. And they went to Peabody, just like their mother.
And her mother's mother.
And her mother, and their grandmother. And then they all went to different colleges, both here and out of state.
Let's take them and say.
Let's see. Carol went to Penn State, and Amy also went to Penn State?
No. Amy went to Pitt Bradford.
Oh, yes. Well, Amy went to Pitt.
And then finished her master's. Then she was transferred down to Pittsburgh, and then she finished her master's in the University of Maryland.
End of side two, tape one, to be continued on tape two.
Indiana, Pennsylvania, with a degree in music. He has a master's in counseling from UK. Carol's a writer. She has a degree in retail writing. She still does that.
Yeah.
That's what she always did.
And